All right, we are recording. I'll give you a quick intro here. So first of all, welcome to Hitchcast, another episode of Hitchcast. And we have a fantastic old friend and guest, Scott Orn from Cruise Consulting. And I'll get a little bit of intro on him. This podcast is a bit different. And that is because we've been seeing, as many of you have seen us, kind of talking about it a lot on LinkedIn and in other podcasts, but we've seen this sort of striking change that has happened in the CISO and security space. The scope, the level of communication have all been elevated. The intensity has been elevated, and just the rise of the CISO and this sort of golden era is becoming very clear. And we report on it a lot. But we also know that it's not the only function that's changing as a result of COVID. And so today we wanted to take a bit of a break from the security side and get a different perspective from the outside world, speaking with our old friends at Cruise Consulting. And for those of you not familiar with Cruise, they're a leading finance advisory firm. It's really become a staple for many funded startups. I first met Cruise about 6 years ago and have been incredibly impressed with how they built their organization, how close they are in family roots, how amazing they are with their clients, and just how robust their portfolio of services have come. In many ways, they have a similar model to Hitch, whereupon they really help companies from everything from establishing the best practices around finance controls, whereas we do it for security, but they do a lot of planning and taxes, and lately with PPP. And oftentimes they play the role of an interim controller, head of tax, or CFO in some of these younger companies. And so they're delivering sometimes the startup's first financial executive presence. It's a very important function. It sort of sets the tone for a lot of these companies. And so in many ways, both Cruise and Hitch are helping their clients sort of define what their future perspective is in those functions. And it's no surprise that during this time, Cruise has been seeing a great solid returns and really a change in their own client approach, but great success. And so without further ado, we'd like to welcome Scott, who's the COO of Cruise, to Hitchcast. So welcome aboard.
Hey, thank you, Michael. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to use that recording of all those kind words. I need to turn that into like an advertisement or something for us. Maybe you're gonna be watching YouTube and see us hear your own words on a YouTube ad or something.
That sounds great. Well, first, I probably stumbled through that a bit, but would love to hear kind of the summary of Cruise and your consulting practice and advisory practice, and really also what you're seeing right now in this really trying time. And I would love to just compare thoughts with you, but if you could share with our audience what you're seeing and how the company is doing, what you're focused on.
Yeah, well, so so it's definitely a trying time. It's crazy time, but it's also kind of a good time for us and our clients in the sense that, financial hygiene has become really, really important with, you know, people need to really focus on their burn rates and extend cash runway and raise money where they can and from creative sources. And also, you know, some of the SBA, CARES Act, PPP loan stuff. So I don't think I've worked this hard since I was doing investment banking in like 1999. but it's been really rewarding because we're seeing that we're helping keep some of our companies alive and we're helping some of the super strong ones really flourish. So it's been really nice. In terms of what we do, we are an accounting and tax firm. And we kind of have three core services. We do the monthly close, like we income statement, balance sheet, cash flow, you know, statement, all the supporting docs, rev rec, all that. And we assign a dedicated controller to each company. So like when our clients all have someone they talk to once a month, and that conversation is actually really important to us because we find it's rewarding because we all work at Cruise because we like working with startups and being part of their journey. But also when we have that conversation, they can ask us questions. We can ask them questions. So you kind of get ahead of any of these little problems that could turn into a big problem. And so that's the first thing we do. The second thing is all the taxes. So federal state income tax, R&D tax credit, state filings, municipal filings. So every sales tax, everything a company needs, we will do on taxes. And we're very fortunate. Our founder, Vanessa Cruz, who's also my wife, was a tax CPA at Deloitte. So we're really strong there. We actually have a 6-person dedicated team of tax CPAs. So it's been really nice to see like the market recognize that tax compliance is actually important. And with R&D tax credits, they can become a thing that mitigates your burn through the payroll tax rebates. So that's the second thing we do. And then third, we do what we call consulting projects, which is like financial modeling or budget to actuals or working out a tax compliance issue with the IRS or, you know, kind of anything that comes up for a startup. We will be there to do it. And we do it a la carte. And, you know, a good example of something we don't do, but because we have an extended network, is like any like technology, security, or things like that that kind of fall in your realm. Like when I get asked those questions, you know, you're the guy, email people or tell them they need to hire someone through you. And so, you know, we pride ourselves on having this big network so that when, if we're not able to answer a question or solve a question, we know exactly who to talk to. And that's rewarding in itself, because at the end of the day, these startups have a lot of needs and there's a lot going on and they're constantly overwhelmed with stuff to do. And so being able to point them in the right direction and help them is really nice.
That's great. And I love the phrase financial hygiene, because we do feel in our business, and we sort of bet on this business around startups and, you know, software producing high consequence software producing companies, with security hygiene and often their lack of when they come out of the gate. They're really focused on building products and really improving the relationships with their customers, as they should. But security is a critical component, as is the financial hygiene as well. So I just love that's how you categorize it. It's just a great way to look at it. And I should probably mention to give a shout out to our common good friend, Derek Shaw, who actually introduced us many years ago. And that's how we all connected. You know, there was the technical side of it. There was the financial recruiting side of it. And then there was Cruz sort of in the middle. And it's been a great relationship there.
Yeah, Derek's awesome. I email him often. And we've been fortunate to work with him on some stuff and send him people. So he knows what he's doing. He's so plugged in. It's really cool.
He is. He's one of the best. And
I'm usually asking him what he is. It's like, hey, Derek, what are you seeing out there? You know, it's not, there's no value I'm providing him. It's all about what is he seeing.
Oh, no, that's great. He's a good human for sure. And I'm curious as to, you know, things have changed so much, and specifically, you may have had a sort of a multiple versions of a blueprint going into a client and a new client engagement. And my understanding is that your rate of new clients, sort of exploded in the last few months, due to this. So I'd love to hear about sort of what you've seen in the growth area, but also how have you changed, or what has the approach been, you know, with best practices and guidance at this time? Has it changed? And if so, what has changed?
In the specific kind of COVID timing?
Correct. Yeah. Since COVID, have customers and new clients, have they come to you seeking a different priority list? Is it the same as it has it, you know, because in the security world, it's changed drastically. And I can walk through that, but everyone's kind of heard me go through that. I'm really more interested in the when they're looking for financial hygiene, what are the things that are coming to you first, and has that changed as a result of COVID?
Yeah, well, there's two kind of, there's the existing customers, and then there's new clients coming to us. And so I'll kind of tackle them separately. The new clients, they're probably people who were trying to get by without an accountant and the right systems architecture. But COVID was kind of like that moment where everyone realized that you couldn't play around with this stuff anymore. And like I said, the burn rates and cash runways became super important, because I'm sure you've seen this in your business too. It's been a lot of good years in a row. And when things are good and things are easy, it's easy to raise money from VCs and things like that. You tend to be less disciplined. And so what we're really seeing is kind of the discipline coming back into the startup ecosystem, and companies, you know, needing to kind of get all their ducks in a row if they're going to raise money. You can't just like go into a VC pitch and just say, you don't know what your burn rate is because your technology is so cool. You know, like the VCs, they have pressure from their partnerships to know exactly how long the cash is going to last and what the milestones are. And so we're kind of putting that all together for the startups. And the role is twofold, both to get them on the right system. So we take a lot of pride in recommending the best accounting and other types of systems that make up kind of your accounting stack. Like, you know, you've got QuickBooks and Expensify and Brex and Bill.com, and then a bunch of other smaller applications and in, you know, things like Gusto, Rippling for payroll and benefits. Those are kind of our sweet spots. But getting them on that, I'm sure you see this in your business too, but like getting them on the right systems is kind of half the battle, because the systems really assist in giving good processes. And then the second thing we're doing is a lot of conversations and a lot of coaching and helping them really understand what their financials are telling them and helping them read them and helping them understand what's acceptable from a burn rate perspective and how much you should be paying people and what you should be spending in some of your other categories. And then kind of the third thing would be translating that to a financial model and budget actuals. The financial model is kind of like your roadmap of where you're going, and you need to be able to articulate that in your board meetings and to new investors. And really the budget actual really fits kind of hand in glove with that, because if you're looking at your budget actuals every month, it kind of shows what your financial model said you would do versus what your true financial results are. It's a really nice self-correcting mechanism. Like, I tell people that budget actuals pay for themselves like 10 times over, because you just start finding spend that you don't need, or you start finding overages that you have to address that's like a structural problem in your business. And so that's the majority of what we're doing these days. There's definitely a lot of, I think you and I were exchanging emails when COVID first hit, and we were processing hundreds of SBA applications for the PPP loans. And that was amazing. That was a crazy chaotic time. But I think when I look back on that, I'm really happy. We have a lot of deep relationships with people in the community, like, you know, Silicon Valley Bank and First Republic and some of the other banks, and a lot of lawyers that we're really tight with. And so it was kind of this collective effort to get to the bottom of what Congress and the SBA and the Treasury are trying to do with the PPPs and how it was changing every day. And so, but we delivered, and our clients are really happy, and the clients got a lot of money that was really important. And now we're coaching them through, you know, how to spend that money and how to get forgiveness. But it's like I said, it's the systems, it's the coaching on, you know, burn rate and what you're doing and the tools to evaluate that. And then the special projects like SBA, PPP loans.
Yeah, that's excellent. And you know, I mentioned in the beginning, but our businesses are very similar in that we're kind of getting in often with the early versions of these companies. You know, it's the first time they're considering perhaps things like finance hygiene and security hygiene. And you hit on a great point, which is that you're spending, what I'm reading is that you're spending a lot more time sort of aggressively coaching and guiding. You know, get on the right systems, consider these different processes. And I think that's really key, because it gives them really strong behaviors to follow as they grow. You know, a lot of times we see with the CISOs, they really don't have a chief sort of mentor officer that they can look to as they start describing business risk, you know, from technical complex issues and code to business risk and how do they communicate. So we're spending an inordinate amount of time since COVID really teaching and guiding CISOs on how to communicate at the executive and board level, make sure that the presentations are crisp and correct, and also know that you're going to be dealing with a lot of ambiguity. And I would imagine in the finance world, that's not the goal, but it is often the reality, and you need to make sure that you're putting the right processes in place. So it's really great to hear that you're spending so much time. I think you're providing a pretty amazing service to these companies that they probably don't realize the value of it right now in the day, but they will as they get older, you know, and more mature. So yeah.
They always realize that the day the term sheet comes in, or the day the kind of soft offer, because they call. Yeah. This is literally my favorite part of the job. They call and be like, I'm getting a term sheet for an acquisition, or hey, I got a VC who wants to lead a $20 million round. What do we need to do in the financials? Like, we gotta scramble. We gotta get this together. And I get to very calmly say, it's all done. There is nothing you have to do. That's why you work with us. And I mean, I just can't even tell you how relieved they are and how happy they are. And it makes me happy too, because I don't want to live that life of like people not doing their job or not communicating with us clearly enough so that we have to scramble because it burns our people out and burns me out. So that's really important. You know, there was something you said a second ago, which I really can relate to, though, which is to kind of paraphrase, you know, we are having more conversations with our clients, but I think a big part of that is our clients are more open to it and more receptive. And we've been trying to have the conversations. And I got to believe, like at the chief information security officer level, the same thing is happening in those companies, because I feel like we've all kind of collectively grown up a little bit in this COVID thing and realized that financial hygiene is important. Information security hygiene is important. And so the people that your clientele are talking to inside the organizations, I feel like this culturally, just from stuff I've read, but it's got to be happening where they're just more receptive. They want to hear what the CISO has to say and what they want to implement. And they also probably understand the ramifications of not following that guidance and not doing it. And I, you know, there's been so many high profile hacks and break-ins and things like that, that it just seems like both of our markets and the clientele, the people we call on, are just more receptive these days.
I agree. I mean, I have a philosophy about this that I think the sort of the world of business, especially here in the Silicon Valley, has given a chance to really slow down and think about what's really important for your business and not be distracted by so many different meetings and traveling. And I've seen a lot more clients focused, and that's the, you know, and they, and they're more empathetic. And so they're willing to listen to someone and individuals with advice to give them. You know, it's not, you know, we're, if you think about both of our respective businesses, I mean, most people would hire an executive search firm because they can go tell them to fetch exactly what they want, and they can do it because they have a bigger and broader network. And that, while that might be true, that's not why we exist. We exist to help companies de-risk the situation, both with the candidate and their own process. And you're doing the exact same thing. And I think it's a great service. And it's, this is kind of a, you know, unfiltered PSA here, but, you know, companies should take note of that, that there are great organizations out there that are really here to help you. They're not just looking for that sale, and that's important. And I think at least in the Valley and some certainly on the East Coast with some of our technology clients, they've really taken the time to listen and be thoughtful about their own processes and about what's going to make them better to grow, which I think is a wonderful kind of an outcome that we didn't see coming with COVID.
But you nailed it where, you know, being more, them being more responsive, I think our businesses mirror each other in that, like, your search can only be as good at a certain level with how much information and how much preferences and how much background and input they give you on what you're really, what they're really looking for. Cause you know what a great CISO candidate looks like, but there's a lot of things at the executive level, like fit is such an important thing, and core values and sharing the core values of an organization are so important. So like, if you're doing a search and you don't have that time with the client to actually get into that and really cover that, like, it's probably going to take you twice as long. And there's a pretty big risk that the client might not get someone they like. Whereas that investment upfront in those conversations with you and really mapping out what they're looking for, I think has a much higher, yields a much higher hit rate and success rate. And we're the exact same way. Like, there's plenty of accounting firms that will take a startup's money and say they're doing their accounting or throw, you know, lip service. But like, we're really doing it, and we only want to work with people who really care and are invested in our process, because that's how they're successful. So I think we share a lot of those, a lot of the process and the values together.
Yeah, it's great. I always say this. People are probably tired of me saying it, but in the security search world, there's a difference between what the company, what the client wants, what the client needs, and what the client's probably going to be able to attract. And our job is to tactfully, through data, show them the differences between those, not to give our opinion, but to show them, you know, this is the data. This is what it looks like when you want all of these. This is what the pool looks like. And here's the risk. You know, you might be just hiring someone just senior enough just for them to get recruited out very shortly after. And that comes down to positioning and compensation and scope. And it's very similar in your business too. You know, this is, you can get by with just this if you do it, but if we show you how to go about and do this, you're going to have a much longer runway of success. That's why I have great respect for everything you're doing. And I love it. And a lot of that starts with how you build your own organization too. So one of the big shifts that I remember when I first met you is that you started in San Francisco and your team was all there, and it was a really fun office environment. It was buzzing every time I would go in. And now your team, correct me if I'm wrong, has really been functioning very successfully for over a year now, I guess, in a remote model. And I'd love to know how that transition has gone, because a lot of this has to do with, you know, your ability to deliver comes from the happiness and balance of your own team. And I'd love, just love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I had fond memories when you were talking about the old office, because we did have a lot of people in there and it was really fun. But what we kind of found was, we were in San Francisco and New York, and then, had folks flying down to LA to cover the LA market. But what we found was hiring in those hubs is just really, really difficult, and really difficult for anyone, let alone, it's like difficult for Google, and Facebook to hire, let alone, us. And so we had toyed with doing remote. In the early days of Cruise, we had done a lot of remote contractors, because that was kind of easy to scale up. But what we found was the quality of the work product we were getting back from them wasn't strong enough. And we kind of have systems of, we call them circuit breakers, where like we have multi-level review. So like before anything goes out to a client, we have like very senior people reviewing everything. And so basically the circuit breakers were breaking all the time, and we were having to kind of do the work again constantly. And so we moved away from that and hired a lot of people into our offices so that we could train and make sure they were kind of getting up to speed and the quality was good, which worked. But we weren't able to attract kind of the senior level or 10 or 15 year experienced accountants that we wanted to, because again, we were going against like the Googles of the world, mm-hmm. And so what we found was, I remember Vanessa and I sitting there one day, we were on vacation, and we just were swimming in leads. Like we just had so many inbound people wanting to work with us, and we couldn't staff it. And we were kind of like depressed. And she said, you know what? I think our systems and our processes are strong enough now. Let's try remote again. And it was this really incredible validation of all the work we had done into our processes and the flows and the checks and signing off on this and signing off on that, and the software we had put in place, both for our clients and internally for us. And we did it and it worked. It was like this incredible moment. And that was 2 years ago. Actually, it's like 2.5 years ago now. And so we've hired remotely since then, and it's worked incredibly well. And I'm super grateful to all of our team members across the country and across the world that work with us. And I think I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure that they have a really great quality of life because they get to live in a place that's flexible and works for them and their family. They don't have to spend a ton of time commuting back and forth to the office. And probably most importantly for them, they get to work with the best startups, in the country and the world, while living in a non-startup oriented place. So we've basically made it so that they can just work with the best companies without living in San Francisco and New York. And that was kind of the key thing. And so for our clients, it really helps them because they are getting really, really great expertise and advice. And they know the financials are done correctly every month. They're not relying on the circuit breakers to catch stuff. They just know it's done correctly the first time. And so it's been a pretty huge win-win. And I would say, when we did this remote, we definitely, like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, we definitely lost a few clients in sales because they wanted someone who could like come to their office, and we would tell them, hey, I'm telling you, Zoom is like just like being in the office, is not a big deal. But, there was a few people who were kind of old school. But what COVID has done is kind of finally kind of made it so that there's that final cultural shift where remote became completely acceptable to everybody. And so I'm thankful for that, because there was probably some companies that we really wanted to work with that we didn't get to because they had an old school mentality, but that's gone now. And it's been validated. So that's us, that's our journey. And I'm happy to answer questions from you or your listeners about how we did it. And we do try to write articles on that and explain the tools we're using, but it's very freeing. And it's also very rewarding to see our team members move around the country or move around the world. And as long as they can work US hours, they're fine, you know? And so I know that we have some of our younger people are moving, you know, from San Francisco to Texas, to Austin, to Houston, or moving to New York or things like that, which is career freedom I didn't have in my late 20s, which I would have really, really valued. You know, I was stuck working in San Francisco and commuting down to Menlo Park and had to be in the office. And so there's just a lot of like personal benefits for the team that come from working in a remote culture.
Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. Thanks for sharing it. And I think the listeners would like to know, I mean, if we had this conversation 6 months ago, you're talking about, you know, an innovative services business that has succeeded in this transition. And now everyone's moving towards this. I mean, it will not be the same moving forward. I give you and Vanessa a lot of credit for sitting on vacation and thinking about how to be the most empathetic business owners you can be, right? Because it was those decisions that really drove this goal of making sure and thinking about both your employees and your teams and as well as your clients. And I think it takes a lot of strength and a lot of vulnerability to get to that point. So I give you a lot of credit for that. Yeah. It's not an easy decision.
Thanks, man. Well, I have to say it was her idea. Like most things are consulting, it was her idea. So I just like nodded and said, yeah, you're right. Let's start posting job descriptions, you know, across the world. Yeah. The one other thing I'd say that's super important about if you are for really, frankly, for any company, but I think for remote too, is we really have a huge emphasis on our core values. And that became a really important guiding light for our company, because I think I'd kind of heard the core value thing and paid it lip service, but I didn't really internalize it probably until the last year, until I really realized how important and how unifying it can be. And, you know, ours are Kaizen, you know, which is continuous improvement, communication, mm-hmm. and collaboration, integrity, innovation, intuitive, data-driven quality, enabling customer greatness. But those seven things are our guiding lights, and it really helps empower the members of our team to police the organization themselves, because people can speak up and say, you know what, that email you sent, that wasn't
an exemplify.
That wasn't good communication and collaboration. Or yeah, you're making a suggestion on changing a process, but where's the data? Like, I want to see the data driven part of the quality aspect of that, you know? And so it becomes this thing that really feeds and builds on itself. That's the result of us, you know, doing some coaching and learning this stuff and being open. But I got to say, it's really helped our organization, and just it's cleared up a lot of ambiguity that can kind of seep in when you are remote, because you're not seeing people at the water cooler or in the elevator on the way up to the office. And so if you're a remote company, I highly recommend you not only adopt, but emphasize and continually discuss the core values. It really helps.
Yeah, that's great. You made a point in there as well about companies about, you know, you making a decision based where there was no data to support your decision. And this is an area that we see as an interesting byproduct of COVID, in that CISOs always operate under ambiguity of data, but they have lots of systems and tools to sort of point them in the right direction. And I'm guessing your business is the same, and that we're seeing clients make decisions that are, you know, kind of the more informed decisions based on ambiguous data. And I'm just curious what you're seeing on the financial hygiene side of that as well. Is that kind of ring true with your business as well?
Yeah. I mean, part of our job for our clients is to try to get rid of as much ambiguity as possible. And luckily, we're accountants and we're very kind of cut and dry kind of people. So we're good at that. But there's so much. Like, a good example of that ambiguity you're talking about is, okay, how long is COVID going to last? And what is the real impact on our business? Because should we be investing more? Should we be investing less? If we lay off people, it's really easy to say, like, you need to lay off 10% of your workforce or something like that. But you have to really think about the costs associated with re-recruiting and hiring people and training them and, you know, waiting a long time for them to get up to speed. And so for a lot of our conversations with the company is like, you, we actually recommend that they maybe lay off less people than they were originally thinking about. Or what we did was, in conjunction with that, suggest they do venture debt or go back to their investors for an internal bridge round to kind of top up the gas tank of cash. Because that it's really tough making decisions in an ambiguous situation. And I think COVID is like the ultimate version of that. Like, I can't sit here and tell you today whether there's going to be a second wave or not and what a second wave is going to do to demand. And if I could, I'd probably be a rich hedge fund person or something like that. But that's the kind of ambiguity that all these startups are working with. And it's, you know, and also what some of the stuff we're seeing is there's been some slight pivots in some of our companies to appeal to something that's a market that's been opened up by COVID. And a lot of times that's working great. Like, we have a company that does 3D printing. I did a podcast on this, actually, like a good news podcast. They make anything with 3D printing, and they realized that there was a huge lack of swabs for testing. It wasn't like the tests that weren't available. It was the swabs that
were swabs. Yeah.
So crazy. These guys have scaled up their 3D printing so fast, and they're now supplying like tons of hospital systems on the East Coast, all because like they sat there in a conference room the Saturday after COVID started hitting and said, what can we do to help? You know, so, So there's, you know, ambiguity. Sometimes people are uncomfortable with that, but a lot of entrepreneurs are really good with it. And that's a good example of like embracing ambiguity and then figuring out the path that you need to follow to be successful.
That's great. I love that story. Definitely encourage everyone to listen to that podcast as well. It's that's what we want to be doing right now. I think kind of finally, you know, you have a lot of customers out there. We do as well. I'd love to, you know, both of our constituents are interested in your advice as to, you know, how to mitigate this sort of economic ramifications during this, during and post pandemic. What are some kind of bits of advice you, and I think you hit upon a few of them just now, but you know, maybe just to summarize, what are some of the bits of advice you might offer to businesses working in this environment today?
I would say if you're looking for cash or extending your runway, there's things that people don't always think about. Everyone kind of knows like go to venture capitalists and raise money, right? But you can go to venture lenders who typically do loans to startups, and they're doing a lot of deals right now. And I used to work in the industry, so it's something I'm very familiar with. There's also folks that do kind of revenue loan type of stuff, which is a little different than venture debt, but it's kind of like a royalty-based repayment stream off your revenue. That's helpful. You can also go to your customers. This is probably my favorite one, which is, you know, oftentimes, especially like with big companies, when they're signing multi-year deals, if you give them discounts, they will prepay a good portion of those invoices. And so incentivizing your sales team and incentivizing your customers to, in fact, give you money up front is just a phenomenal way of doing things. And then, of course, you know, you do have to look at your cost structure and make sure that everyone's contributing and that, you know, their salary has a high ROI. And, you know, look at other pieces of your cost structure. And then probably the other big aspect I would say is software in most cases is your friend. And odds are you can implement some type of software to automate some of the manual processes you're doing. So for us, we've implemented this thing called CruiseKeeper, which we built internally, which plugs into QuickBooks and automates about 70% of the transaction labeling and categorization. So it's like this kind of stuff that like a human would do, like they would type in the name of a vendor like Uber and put it into the transportation category on a P&L. Well, we automated that, and that's saving us a lot of money and a lot of time and has allowed us to kind of keep our headcount flat for a while despite the growth. So like there's a lot of that, a lot of those like software efficiencies, whether you're building it or just buying it from a vendor. And sometimes in a downturn or recession, people get really nervous about buying or implementing new software. But really, that is kind of the best time to do it because A, you can get deals on it, and B, you can cut out costs that are probably done manually. And I'm sure there's a lot of examples of this in the security space where, you know, the people you're bringing into the companies can actually automate a lot of stuff that maybe wasn't getting automated because maybe there wasn't just a strong enough CISO in place, you know, or no CISO in place.
Yeah, that's first of all, amazing advice. Brilliant tool that you've built. It could save hundreds of hours of time, and just a great thought process as well. I think everyone will appreciate it. This has certainly been fun. I always enjoy talking to Scott and hearing his insights and wisdom from Cruise Consulting. Scott, how can we get in touch with you and the team?
Yeah, you could just go to Cruise Consulting, K-R-U-Z-E, consulting.com. And I'm Scott at Cruise Consulting. You can just shoot me an email, but we have tons of info on the site. And you don't even have to work with us. You can just use the information, use our models that you can download, use our calculators, do your thing. It's kind of that simple. And then check out my podcast, Founders and Friends. You can just type in like Founders and Friends or Cruise Podcast or Scott Orne into Google. This thing Google is going to be pretty big. Just check that out. And I just want to thank you for having me, Michael. Hitch Partners is so cool. I'm so happy that you guys are doing so well. It takes a lot of guts to start something, especially a professional services firm like what you guys are doing. And so I have a lot of respect for what you've built and what you've accomplished. And I know some of the off the record, some of the completion projects you've done where you've landed really great people for your clients. So I'm super happy for you, and I'm happy to recommend Hitch Partners.
Well, thank you, Scott. And my best to you and the team and your family, your growing family. And we wish you health and safety. And thank you for joining.
It's great. All right, buddy. To talk to you. I appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Scott. Bye.